over head kick. And what a goal it was! Stewart makes it 1-1.
And it is a gorgeous little chip. This could well be the moment. It is the moment!
Welcome to episode 5 of Kickoff, the Football New South Wales competitions podcast. It's the official podcast of NPL New South Wales and Football New South Wales leagues competitions. My name's Teo Pelizzeri, joined by my co-host Henley Warner. Henley, great to see you again.
You too. What a month it's been of football, hey?
Yeah, it certainly has. And NPL New South Wales continued on through the World Cup, of course, sharing the spotlight and hopefully getting a little bit of that World Cup shine on it. And we've managed to crown the Premiers with RPL Leichhardt beating St George City in the final round to win that trophy. First past the post, no final series, Henley. So it means that those scenes of celebration were it. They get the trophy, they get their place in the record books, and they get to go into the off-season feeling pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. What a season it's been for them. They've all put in the hard work. I think it's a very thoroughly deserved win for these boys. You know, can't wait to see what, you know, next season brings for them.
Now, the NPL New South Wales women's title, Apia also doing the double there. It went down to the final round against the emerging Jets. And, you know, you've still got to turn up and actually play and win the games. But, gee, they held off MacArthur Rams, who had a fantastic end to the season. And certainly a case where, with a final series still to come on top of it, I do feel like there's more to the story. Like, if it had been first past the post, you would have said, well done, Apia, for, you know, staying the course and staying the distance. Yep. But as we know, there's a little bit more to the story.
More to it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I think it's great for Apia to get the two of them with the wins. What more do they want?
Now, League One premiers were Hills United, so they will be going up into the top division next season, which is exciting for them, another team from the West as well. So, you know, the competition skews a little bit more in that direction, and, you know, credit to them for finishing top of a hugely competitive league. And I think it really speaks to the strength of football in New South Wales that you have so many games, not just in the top tier, but in the second tier as well. It really shows, I think, the commitment of the players, the clubs, and how seriously they take it that we have really strong, extensive leagues. You know, last season, 22 games wasn't enough.
No, definitely
so
not.
So this season feels like we've got, I would say, the right amount. I mean, from February to August is a pretty long season.
It is, but you get like a proper look at the clubs and you allow them to grow within that time. So I think it's perfect timing.
And League One Women's was one of the closest battles of the season, with both teams contending and spending time on top of the table throughout the campaign. But the Central Coast Mariners' shock midweek loss to SD Raiders set up the University of New South Wales to claim the title with a victory against Blacktown City and finishing the season undefeated as premiers. Henley, given your ties to University of New South Wales, we've brought it up on every episode, but I mean, it's been unavoidable because this team has certainly put its name up in lights.
They've come in leaps and bounds, and especially, like, you know, not just first grade, the 20s as well, they were premiers as well with the boys. Like, it's just such a great thing for such hardworking athletes that they are. I think it's really great that this work's finally paying off for them. They deserve every part of it. And, you know, throughout the season, it was very back and forwards with Mariners. But, you know, this is what they needed. It was like a prayer from the football gods. They gave it to them. It was answered. So, yeah, very exciting for the club and just really excited to see what they bring with the promotion for next year.
Now, speaking of University of New South Wales, the League Two men's premiers, a comfortable win ahead of Nepean, who go into the promotion relegation playoff against Mounties Wanderers. So, Henley, your men's team, you've been a big rap for them, and they're obviously trying to climb the table as well.
Absolutely.
What's the ceiling? Are we looking at a team that's going to go bang, bang, double promotion, or are they just going to try and consolidate in League One next season?
Oh, gosh, I'd love for a double promotion, but I think, you know, these boys are on the right track. You know, with the promotion coming up, I think it would be great for them. You know, they're, again, they've put in the hard yards. They work well together, and, you know, they've been wanting this for so long. So it's about time they, you know, got that recognition and they're going up. What more could you want?
Okay, and don't forget, we've got promotion relegation playoffs coming up. The NPL and League One Pro-Rel playoff is Mount Druitt Town Rangers against St George FC. So not to be confused with St George City, it's the other St George, the old St George Budapest. So Mount Druitt Town against St George. That'll be really tough for Mount Druitt Town because even though they've gone on a good little run in the Waratah Cup, their league form has been very, very shy of wins. So I wouldn't be surprised if that ended up being decided in an extra time penalty shootout sort of situation. And the other one, Nepean against Mounties. So good luck to those two teams in the League 1, League 2 pre-roll playoff. And I've got to say, these are some of the best games, some of the highest stakes games. If you're a neutral just looking to get along to a match that really means something and really matters, these are the ones to get along. Check out the Football New South Wales competitions page and get along to watch these games. And speaking of things that are on, which people can go and watch, Henley, take us through what's on.
Well, I reckon this month coming up, we've got some jam-packed action. We've got both the Sapphire and Waratah Cup finals coming up. So it should be held at Leichhardt Oval on the 10th of September. We've got RP Leichhardt versus the Northern Tigers for the Sapphire Cup, and then also RP taking on Sydney United for the Waratah Cup. On top of that, we've got the NPL New South Wales Women's and League One Women's Grand Final to take place on the 17th of September, providing a great opportunity to see the state's best go head-to-head. The Women's World Cup, you know, it may be over, but I still think we have so much quality female football still to be seen here in New South Wales. So if you're around, go and support these women. You know, they're absolutely smashing it at the moment. And we've got our 2023 Football New South Wales Gala Awards to take place on the 21st of September at the Star, where for the first time we'll be merging NPL New South Wales Gold Medal Dinner and the Football New South Wales Silver Medal Dinner into one major celebration for the top tiers of football. Big month ahead. We've got heaps of finals. So if you want to watch some quality football, this is the place to be.
It certainly is, and it's hard to believe what an amazing year it's been. Think of the two winners of last year's medals, Jaden Kacharski of Sydney FC and Rolla Badawiya of Sydney University at the time, and now Kacharski's very much looking like he'll play every game for Sydney FC's A-League team through summer, and Rolla has moved on to the Central Coast Mariners for the A-League Women's.
Very exciting news for both of them.
I think it's proven that if you're the top player in New South Wales, it does open up doors and it does help turbocharge your career.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, moment of the month. Henley, I'll let you lead off here because I have a slightly different moment of the month for you this time.
Sorry, this might be a bit biased, but it's been an absolutely huge month for UNSWFC. Our men's first grade in the League 2, they have won and they're the premiers. So that has been absolutely huge back home at the club. We also have the under-20s, the women's in League 1. They've won it as well. They've reached their 100-goal milestone. It's been celebrations galore. So I just think that has been a massive thing for our club recently, and that was my moment of the month. The celebrations that I saw, you know, these boys, as I said, they have worked so hard, and it's not just the players as well, it's the behind the scenes. It's the club administrators, the TDs, everything like that, coaches that have put time into these teams to make sure that they're the best that they can be. So kudos and credits to everyone at UNSW who's put in the effort to see these athletes succeed. What about you?
Well, I am going, even though the Australia Cup didn't work out too great for the teams from New South Wales, mm-hmm. I am choosing both Inter Lions and Mount Druitt Town Rangers for winning their games in the round of 32. So, yep. Sadly, they both got knocked out in the round of 16. Inter Lions got knocked out by Metro Stars in stoppage time. That looked as though that game was going to extra time, and they ended up losing 1-0 over in Adelaide. And Mount Druitt Town lost 3-0 to Heidelberg from Victoria. But a credit to both those teams. It was the first time that Inter Lions had made it to the round of 32. It was the first time that Mount Druitt Town Rangers had won a game in the national rounds. They'd been there twice before. They'd lost twice before, but they beat Canberra Croatia. So, and Sydney United, they bowed out against A-League opposition. You were there, actually.
Yeah,
I might get your thoughts in a second, but I just wanted to pay tribute to all the Football New South Wales participants. Unfortunately, that's it. It's over. There's one NPL team from Adelaide. There's two from Victoria. Yeah. But other than Wanderers and Sydney FC, there's no one flying the flag for New South Wales anymore. But you were at Sydney United's defeat. Mm. Not the scoreline they would have been hoping for. But I tell you what, they kept attacking and kept creating. And in a credit to them, it's not like they shut up shop and tried to, you know, save their skins and protect the scoreline. They actually kept trying to score a goal. It's just once it got to 3-0, there was only ever going to be one winner.
Exactly. Look, it's a, you know, never say die kind of situation with United. They, you know, kept going to the last minute, but it was so, like, even for Brisbane, like, they did such a great job. History was made that day. We had a 15-year-old kid out there getting goals that he not only made.
I mean, for the other team, come on, you can't say that you take credit for Brisbane Roar scoring
no, but
a goal.
Still, like, you know, it was a great milestone. But for Sydney United themselves, you know, that sadly that is the end of their Oz Cup journey. However, you know, it's just now we can reflect and see where, you know, what's happened. And you know.
And it would be remiss of me not to mention Apia, of course, who...
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, took it up to Sydney FC, I thought, and nil all at halftime, hanging in there to an extent, overrun in the second half. But it was a great crowd at Leichhardt Oval. Hopefully that'll be reflected for the Sapphire Cup and Waratah Cup finals, because it showed that there was plenty of support out there. It's a great venue if it is convenient for you to get to it.
Yes.
And I must admit that I always enjoy games at Leichhardt Oval. So, I mean, credit to Apia, obviously already our champions, but they took it up to A-League opposition. And, you know, but I think in particular, Apia have been there and done it before. They've beaten A-League teams before. I think it was special for Mount Druitt Town to at least finally tick off that first win. And for Inter Lions, you know, they didn't get promoted. They're going to be back in League One next season.
Yeah, true.
So come cup time, they're probably going to need a, you know, bit of luck of the draw in order to ever get back to this stage in the near future. But hey, we might see them back in the Australia Cup national rounds in 3, 4, 5 years' time.
Exactly. All the best to them.
All right, those were our moments of the month. It's time to get into our guests. Stay with us here on Kickoff. It's the Football New South Wales Competitions Podcast. Mitre is the official ball sponsor of NPL New South Wales and Football New South Wales Leagues competitions. Visit Mitre Sports Australia for all your football needs. Mitre, a different league. Let's go to the Football New South Wales Women's NPL, because it has been an amazing logjam of teams through the middle of the table to end the home and away season. And the Illawarra Stingrays have been one of the teams that have really shaken it up. Kayla Austin is one of their players and she joins us as our guest. Kayla, it's great to have you on Kickoff.
Thanks for having me.
So it's amazing to think that before the Women's World Cup started, I was looking at the club championship and the relegation battle. And Illawarra were right up to their necks in it with the likes of Blacktown and Bankstown. And it looked as though it was going to be a pretty hair-raising run to the finish line. But hasn't the senior team and some of the results you've picked up just breathed a new lease of life into your entire club? And the R word, off the table, totally gone.
Yeah, no, it was pretty daunting. We had a few meetings about it and talked about how we're going to turn this around. And the Stingrays have a never say die attitude, but it come to Apia. Again, we're 3-0 down, and then our coach kind of gave us a revving, and we turned it around, and we haven't really looked back since.
Seriously, I mean, one thing that I was quite worried about is what Illawarra Stingrays represents to Wollongong and to women's and girls players in the region. How much weight of responsibility did you as a senior playing group feel to make sure that the club didn't get relegated and that you preserved your status in the top division?
Oh, the weight of the Illawarra, really, because you had people like, I don't know, I had a few people messaging me going, you can't slip down, and you know the pressure's on, but you've always got Michelle Carney, Caitlin Cooper, Danita, Chloe to back you 110%, and that's exactly what we did.
Now, you just mentioned Michelle and Caitlin. You've played with some absolutely phenomenal players in the NPL New South Wales women's realm. How do you believe that playing alongside, you know, these women has impacted your own gameplay?
I've been lucky enough to play with Carney since I was 14, and just like I say, I'm lucky enough to coach the 15s, and I always say just be a sponge, because half of her game I've taken into my own game, and she's a role model to me, like to many of the others at the Stingrays. But like I said, she's a role model to myself, and I watch her very closely.
Tell us about your 15s. How are they going this season, and what are some of the characteristics that your team has become known for with you as the coach?
Oh, they're a good bunch. I've got a fairly new team, so I've got a few from the Sutherland Sharks and Southern Shire region. I've got some from Nowra, Illawarra, a bit of everywhere. But they've come together. We're a really close-knit group, and I love having a laugh with them. We're about mid-table at the moment. We've had a few wins, few losses, but like I said, I love them. They're like I say, they're like my kids.
At that age, certainly that's where a lot of players decide to stop playing. You know, sort of that age 14 to 16 is where women's players in particular, whether it's education, whether it's just not feeling, you know, particularly enthusiastic or comfortable about playing, you know, competitive sport. What is it that is the things that you do as a coach to make sure that players stay engaged and don't want to walk away from football and actually, you know, keep playing the sport which has captured their attention and captured their love?
I think as a coach, especially being a female coach, like back in my day, like we didn't really have female coaches. It was very rare. And looking back, you're looking at the NPL now, you've got Manly that have a great setup. Even Koalas have a great setup where they've got their coaches and their assistant coaches and players. And as a 15-year-old, like I'd be buzzing if I had a Michelle Carty coach of me, because it's that experience you can't coach or take on. It's just learning. But no, it's a long day. It is a long day from the start to the finish, but their smile at the end of the day is worth every cent.
Now, apart from Stingrays, you've also played at a lot of other South Coast clubs, you know, such as, you know, Dapto Phoenix Junior, Albion Park. However, you're not one of the only amazing players that the South Coast has produced. We also have Matilda Caitlin Ford. She's also happens to be a proud football South Coast player. How do you feel that she, along with all of her Matilda's teammates, have inspired, you know, teams such as your under-15s and, you know, to you know, get out there and kick a football and actually be a part of the game?
Oh, it's great. It's because when we talk about soccer before the World Cup, it was kind of like the NRLW was booming, AFLW was booming. So it was a bit of a scary time for football. But with the World Cup happening, it's kind of given a new life into it. Even the girls at training, they're like a bit like, some of them like were a bit down. We're like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to play. And then this World Cup came around, watching the games, it's like, oh, well, it's on. Let's go. And having Caitlin come to the training sessions and talk to the girls, it's just inspired them even more. And they're thriving. They want to do better. They want to play with the bigger kids. They want to play and they want to represent Australia. So reach for the stars, I'll say for them.
It's interesting you mentioned they're watching the games, because you would probably know, whether it's teammates you've played with or players that you've coached, there are a lot of players that just play and don't watch, whether it's watching A-League or Champions League or Premier League or the Matildas. There's a lot of players who their only involvement with football is when they themselves play and they don't actually watch other teams, watch other games. How much do you think the World Cup will just help not just new players take up the game, but existing players that maybe just, you know, played socially or played to keep fit, actually turn them into football fanatics that kind of live and breathe the game?
Oh, I think it's too, like, I'm a visual learner, so I like to see it. So even just watching, like, even the big bringing in VOs now, so watching your own game, and even like there's nothing worse when your coach is trying to tell you something and you quite don't understand. So getting to watch that footage back and go, oh well, that's what they meant, or okay, I understand now. And like I said, the game's growing at a rapid pace, so hopefully it continues growing and we can continue watching more and watch the girls succeed.
You know, you mentioned that, like, the game's growing and things like that, especially in regards to women's football. And an interesting fact about Stingrays is that it's one of the only female-only NPL New South Wales women's clubs. What's it like, you know, being in a female-only club with, you know, what are the advantages do you think that it brings to the club, and how do you think it impacts the girls that play there?
The NPL commentator stated we wear these pretty pink jerseys and that he wanted one. And that's a standout alone. Everyone comments on our jerseys, and it's not every day that you see a pink jersey running around. But it's we take pride in it. The Wolves we have the Wollongong Wolves down here. They're great with us at the moment. But unfortunately, we are the NPL, the only girls, but we don't have a home ground. But like I said, the council, we're working with council at the moment to try and sort that out. So fingers crossed we get a home ground where we can call home.
And I just wanted to circle back to when you mentioned Caitlin Ford coming and speaking to the players at Stingrays. Was that something that happened before or during the World Cup, or are we talking about a little bit before then?
It was only actually a few days before she had to go into camp for the World Cup. So there was a Smiths commercial. You can find it online somewhere. There's a few of the juniors. She dressed up as a groundkeeper, and she was kicking the ball around. The girls were like, oh, who's well, what's this groundkeeper doing? They're meant to be putting up nets, sweeping leaves away, and started kicking the ball. They went, oh, it's actually all right. And then long behold, it's Kate LaFord, and they got their boots signed, jersey signed. I definitely heard about it for the next few days.
Fantastic. It's great to hear. Now, Kayla, you've been generous with your time, but we want 60 seconds more because Henley's going to ask you some rapid-fire Q&A to finish. So just give us the first answer that comes to mind.
All right. You ready?
Ready.
Okay, good. Who do you reckon is the most difficult player you've played against?
Tash Pryor.
Sam Kerr or Caitlin Ford?
Oh, I'll go with Wollongong girl, Caitlin Ford.
Good answer. Your go-to pump-up playlist?
Oh,
what's
ABBA.
That song? ABBA. Oh, that's good.
Who controls the playlist in the Stingrays rooms?
Believe it or not, the younger girls. So the 18s have just pushed through to reserve grade. They've got a button, and we stick to that.
Well, how good! And what is the pre-game meal?
Pre-game meal, spaghetti bolognese.
And the Stingrays player that has the best banter?
Chloe Middleton.
An up-and-coming youth player at the club to watch out for?
Oh, bit of a tricky one.
Mm.
Say Ella Giles.
And your favourite away ground in NPL New South Wales?
Apia.
Kayla, thank you for the insights into how things are going at Illawarra Stingrays and also your insights into what's going on down there. We appreciate you joining us on Kickoff.
No, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
The winter season may be coming to an end, but the football doesn't stop there. There are summer football and futsal competitions starting up across the state, as well as introductory football programs available to join. So if you know what's good for you, head to 2023.footballnewsouthwales.com.au and search for your competitions and programs running this summer in your local area.
Now on Kickoff, it's time to talk about NPL New South Wales men's first grade because we have the technical director of St George City, former Socceroo, Atek Gensch, who has joined us. Atek, it's great to have you on Kickoff.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, guys.
So the season has come to an end for St George City after winning promotion and really showing everyone what you're capable of. I was out at a couple of your games commentating this season at Penshurst Park, and I've got to say, certainly one of the more entertaining and very watchable teams in a senior men's point of view. How did you find the year?
Well, obviously a great year for us, finishing fifth after promotion. If you've asked us before the season whether we'd take that, we probably would have. So obviously it was a season where we thought we could consolidate and then build from. But, we did really well, really happy with, the way we, conducted ourselves, the performances, the way we recruited. Obviously a lot of the work's done in pre-season when you need to bring the right types of players to a club. So, we scored, 62 goals, I think, throughout the year, so which is phenomenal. Just, I thought, we finished fifth, or we could have easily finished a bit higher. So I'm pretty happy.
I've got to say, with a month to go, I thought you were one of the form teams in with a good chance of finishing second even in the race to try and finish second to Apia in the end. Just from a practical point of view, though, with how you're setting up the club and, knowing the amount of commitment involved, the season went from 22 games to 30 games, which is a big leap, a much longer season, a much greater commitment. Obviously, you've got to factor in when you're doing the recruiting and re-signing your players, the finances of semi-pro guys that are going to be giving up so much more of their time. How big an adjustment was that, especially coming up a division and competing at a higher standard as well?
Yeah, look, it was a massive challenge for us because, and you're right, 22 weeks to 30 weeks, it's something that hasn't happened for a long time. So, there's a lot of things, a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and we've got some good people around the club. Don't forget, this club started through the St George Football Association. We're an independent club now, but we've got a really good connection to the Georges River Council area. And obviously, there's a large number of young players that play in the area. So, look, obviously, financially, you need to bring good people on board and good sponsors and so on. And the key to that was bringing on some good board members who believed in what we were trying to do, and they've been really, really good with that. Like, it's been excellent in terms of the back end. It's always a challenge, right? Because you look at the teams that we play against. And you're talking about some heavy hitters and traditional clubs that I've got a lot of respect for. And I was an ex-Marconi player myself, and you look at the resources they have, and Sydney United's a great club, and the Harpiers and Sydney Olympic and Wollongong, all these teams are traditional clubs that have got a lot of backing and a lot of history. So for us as a new club, if you look at it, we started in 2016. That was our first year in State League. And we, you know, we had that sort of plan to go up the leagues, up to NPL 1. And if you take out the two COVID years, we've been able, managed to do that in 5 years, which is phenomenal. But with that comes the other challenges, financial, making sure that we had a ground, we had all the fundamentals right. The ground here at Penshurst Park is fantastic, and we want to thank Georges River Council for that. And the people that come here love, you know, the new dressing rooms, the little grandstand, and the pitch is really nice as well. So we're very fortunate.
Look, I want to circle back to a part you said about, you know, just starting in 2016, the State League. You know, St George City has come in leaps and bounds, you know, with this year getting into that top tier. You know, they have started that NPL career in a bang, you know, starting in fifth ahead of the likes of Sydney FC. Can you just talk us through, you know, the season, but the goals that the team set out to achieve at the start of that season?
Yeah, we kind of knew in terms of recruitment that we probably weren't in the market for the real high-profile players, so we had to be very smart in the way we recruited. And if you look at some of the players that we brought in, I mean, Daniel Alessi, who actually was part of the Western Sydney Wanderers during the Tony Popovich era and played in the Asian Champions League with them, was a guy that actually went overseas, had a couple of injury problems, came back, was playing at Harkoa in NPL 2. So we knew his quality. He's one of the best players in the league, so we were fortunate enough to get him. And another guy named Dominic Cox from Harkoa. We unearthed a player that SD Raiders had brought through, Franco Mayer. And I spoke to Nick Carl about him, and he came highly regarded. He had a great year as well. So he came from NPL 2. We kept the core of players from last year. That's kind of our DNA, Tariq Erkan and Nathan Roberts and these sorts of guys. Alex Kiriakou stayed, and Brendan Hooper. So we're happy with that. And the rest of it was pretty much guys that kind of we were fortunate enough to get, because the Petrados brothers, Costa and Mucky, and I used to coach them when they were like 12-year-olds, and so they just popped up. We thought, oh, wow, we're pretty lucky here. And we were fortunate enough to get Presley Ortiz, a young guy from the Wanderers. He'd been in Portugal for a couple of years. So, you know, and then we went after a lot of young players, Thomas Lopez, Aidan Mustafi, and so on. So we were lucky. And then our visa player, Pedro Ferrari, who, contrary to what people think, we never signed him because he had a great name. We actually saw him on a video that was sent to us, and I went, oh, wow, this guy can move. And I remember sending the video to our coach, Mickey Ural, who goes, oh, let's get this bloke on board. So he's been phenomenal as well. So, look, so it was kind of a different way we sort of assembled the squad. And, you know, the challenge is to not only keep a bunch of these guys, it's to ensure that we get better.
Well, but before I circle back to one of the individuals you mentioned there, it's funny that you mention how to get better, because the last time I saw your St George City live was the game against Sydney FC at Penshurst Park, so probably about the fourth or fifth last game. But I walked away from that game, and I speak to some of the other commentators and journos, and I was actually asking them, how does St George upgrade this team to make the leap from upper mid-table to actual title contender? And I didn't think the gap was necessarily that big, but given that you have a hands-on role in sort of turning the team from upper mid-table to title contender, just how difficult is that in practical terms, both with sort of the player market, the retention of players, but also making sure that you're leaving capacity to promote your juniors as well?
Yeah, there's a lot of work goes on behind the scenes. If you have a look at the dynamic at the moment, you've got a whole bunch of our players are in demand from other clubs. Now, they've come to us, they've established themselves, they've made a name for themselves again. So it's always a challenge trying to keep those guys. But we're under no illusions. We need to improve because, I mean, at the beginning of the year, people would have thought, oh, St George City, they might be one of the relegation candidates. So, you know, sometimes, you catch others by surprise a little bit. But, look, we need to ensure that the players we bring to the club have got the right attributes, characteristically, physically, and also mentally, to make sure that they're guys that we know can compete each week. And, look, we played up here in that last game, and, you know, there's a real physicality to the league as well, so you've got to match that and technically. And so, really, for us, it's keeping core players and trying to bring some extra quality into the squad, because we did lose a few midway through the year. Aidan Mustafi signed a contract in Germany. Thomas Lopez went back to the Wanderers. I mean, young guys coming through, fantastic footballers. And our goalkeeper, Nick Burke, went back to New Zealand. And you know what I mean? So we didn't end up with a big squad. At the same time, we've got some good young players coming through. I mean, Matt Karamaleski has come really, he's been with us for like 6 years, and he's really come on as a footballer. So I think the key for us now is to identify and recruit some real quality beyond what we have currently. And that is a challenge because you've got to be able to finance that, and you've got to be able to make sure that they can see the vision of what we're trying to do here. And I suppose we just need to improve. If we don't improve a lot, we could find ourselves at the other end, right? We're conscious of that. But we're confident enough in our own abilities as a football department to ensure that doesn't happen.
No, and well, Sydney Olympic is proof that even bringing back a strong team is no guarantee that you won't be looking over your shoulder in the second half of the season. One individual I wanted to ask about, because he's been playing friendly games for Melbourne Victory in the A-League preseason, is Presley Ortiz. You mentioned his time in Portugal. From what I've seen, he's a great physical presence, and depending on the opponent, he was either used as a target man and a bit of a battering ram, but he also was very capable of facing goal and scoring goals for himself, not necessarily having to be a target man or a facilitator. So where's he at with his football? And do you think that Melbourne Victory taking such a close look at him is evidence that A-League is around the corner?
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Presley. I think Presley's, what, 6'2". Like you said, he's got that presence. He proved to be a goal scorer as well. I think he's got about 11 goals. For me, I keep telling him he could have doubled that tally. He's got a bit of X factor, particularly inside the box. You know, he's... you know, when you think he's going to pull the trigger, he'll make a second move or a third move. But he's a phenomenal young footballer. He is down in Melbourne at the moment. Whether that A-League contract for him eventuates, I think he's certainly a player that could play at that level. And he's still young. Like, he's 19, turning 20. He's still got a big future ahead of him. But he was someone that was fantastic for us. So we'll see what happens with Melbourne Victory. I know there's a couple of other A-League clubs who are interested in him. And we're proud of that as a club. We actually want to progress players as well. So, you know, I like the fact that we can recruit players that have ambition. You know, whether you're a Dean Pelicanos, whether you're a Presley Ortiz, whether you're a Maki Petrados, or whoever you are, you've got to have ambition, and that's what we want, players with ambition.
It's funny you say that, because it was literally going to be my follow-up question about sort of that tug of war between wanting the best interests for your club versus wanting to make sure that if a player gets that opportunity in the professional ranks, that, you know, the club won't necessarily stand in his way. Because I guess, you know, whether or not National Second Division is around the corner, or what happens next with the esteem the NPL is held in, you've still got a responsibility to your own club, and A-League teams coming in and cherry-picking your talent can happen at less than ideal times. I think, as Apia found out with Fabian Monge, losing him for their Australia Cup run. So it is a bit of a balancing act, isn't it?
Oh, it very much is. You know, that's a conversation in itself around the way the game is structured here in Australia. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, where else in the world do you have a situation where, let's say you're an NPL club and Sydney FC or a Wanderers or MacArthur Bulls, Mariners, can come into your club, grab your player and have that player play against you in a promotion relegation scenario without any compensation to clubs, right? So that in itself is a conversation. Obviously, with no domestic transfer systems in place, it's a challenging thing. And that happens at youth level as well. So if we've got 10 of the best young players at St. George City, and any A-League club can come and grab them. So it can be very, very difficult. Fortunately for us, you know, we've been able to manoeuvre, identify the right players, and we'll just keep doing that.
Now, you have a lot of accolades to your names, you know, both on the pitch but also off in the administrative kind of arena, let's say. You know, your TD at the club. However, you were a successful premiership and championship winning coach with the Blacktown City and a former NSL player. Now, I want to know, what are your thoughts on the NPL New South Wales men's comp, and what do you think, like, the role that it plays in the development of our code?
Yeah, I think the NPL competition is very, very strong. I think it was a good move going to 16 teams. I think if you look at the quality of, the A-League, I'm a big fan of the A-League. I think the A-League's a high-quality league, and it's certainly no worse than most of the leagues in the world, apart from, you know, a few of them that are just another level. NPL players are fantastic footballers. And, you know, we live through this week in, week out, and I look at the quality of the players and I think this is a good league, a good, strong league. And it's just cutthroat. If you look at, I mean, Western Sydney Wanderers were hovering around second last most of the year, and I look at their lineup and I think, wow, these are some of the best young talent in the country. If you look at MacArthur Bulls, who actually came last and got and were relegated, I was saying to one of our staff that I would actually sign 10 of their starting 11, right? So it just goes to show the quality and the competitive nature of the league. In terms of, look, I'm a big believer in promotion relegation. I think that we need to bring that in. I know there's logistical issues and, you know, all these A-League clubs, but that's just world football. I mean, you look at the English Premier League, you know, Manchester United and Liverpool and all these Chelsea don't turn around and go, oh, no, we don't want relegation because we might get relegated. No, because you're a powerhouse club. So if Bournemouth are there and you might have teams who aspire from the lower divisions, they should be able to get to that level. And, you know, whether you're playing in front of 5,000 or 50,000, without that promotion relegation scenario, and I know people are going to go, oh, logistically this can't happen. Mm. Without that aspirational, you know, incentive, I would love my club to be an A-League club. I know at the moment it's not going to happen, right? But you know what I mean? Like, at least you can dream. And without challenge, you know, football kind of dies a little bit. So anyway, that's another conversation as well.
No, but I think it's, look, it's one that can happen and will keep happening. And believe me, it happens between me and my football following mates as well. Now, you've been involved in the game, as Henley mentioned, player, coach, technical director, but just from this conversation, there's still such a thirst and such an enthusiasm in your voice. And as a former international, given the game is on a high off the back of the Women's World Cup, the men did so well at the World Cup as well, it's reflected in the enthusiasm with which someone like me turns up to commentate NPL games or gets into following the league where I can touch it at a hands-on level. How enthused are you about the sport at the moment? Because just from speaking to you here, it seems as though, you know, there's still such a love and such a dedication, and it seems as though, you know, your appetite for the game is as strong as ever.
Yeah, it is. I'm fortunate because I get to do a lot of things around the club here, and you know, I was obviously one of the guys that set up this club and grew it. And so, yeah, I'm really enthusiastic. I'm a positive thinker when it comes to the game. I believe in Australian football. I believe in the young players. I believe in, you know, the way we play. I'm a lover of the Socceroos, and the Matildas are amazing. So, you know, I went to the game. I went to their first game, followed it. You know, I even do a bit of work at one of the local schools in Randwick, and it was funny. We had all these year three kids, and it was about 30 of them. And I said, we were playing a little mini World Cup, and I said to all the young players, I said, who wants to be the Matildas? And everyone put their hand up, all the boys, all the girls. Then I said, who wants to be the Socceroos? And nobody put their hand up.
Short memories. They did pretty well for us 6 months ago.
Yes.
Last one, and it is about St George City. I mean, I've been out to Penshurst Park a couple of times this season. It is a great setup. The grandstand, sort of, you know, really easy ground to access as well. And it is quite close to a lot of the, you know, fast food along the strip there. And, you know, it's always buzzing. But when you come in and when you go out of the ground and sort of drive away, how do you get more fans through the gate? I know that you're more concerned about the on-field, the football side and the quality of the product. And, hey, you mentioned scoring more than 60 goals. It was a very entertaining product. But is one of the next steps, big picture for the club, to engage a bit more of the community and start to build a bit more of a supporter base as well?
Yeah, 100%. That's the next steps. You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of resources we're putting in the background to ensure that happens, particularly with all the local clubs and schools around the area here, and the fact that we represent a region, and we're the, you know, we play at the highest level of any team in this area. So, yeah, that's very, very important with all local businesses and so on. So we're working on that. So you've got to keep on working behind the scenes to ensure the club's viable moving forward. And that means, you know, going out to schools and going out to local businesses and dealing with all the local clubs in the St George Football Association. So, look, there are times when, like, we played Rockdale in round one. The place was, there's a lot of people here, you know. Some of those big games attract crowds. But, you know, we need to do more of that and ensure that we are a team that people follow. But one thing I'm happy about is the fact that because we play an attractive brand of football, people come down and go, oh, wow, this is good. I enjoy this, you know, and we sort of keep doing that as well.
Well, ASEC, it's been fun chatting. And as you mentioned, there are a couple of threads we probably could have pulled and chatted for a lot longer. But I do appreciate your insights into how things are going at St. George City. All the best for the off-season. It sounds as though you're going to be fielding about 1,000 phone calls and making 1,000 more. But between now and kickoff for the next campaign, all the best to you and to St. George City. And thank you for joining us on kickoff.
No worries, guys. Thank you very much.
After a three-year hiatus, Football New South Wales are delighted to relaunch the annual coaching conference in 2023. Hosted at Valentine Sports Park, the weekend will be packed with presentations and learnings from some of the best in the game, providing a valuable development opportunity for coaches at all levels. Tickets are on sale now, with early bird pricing available until 5:30 p.m. on Friday, September 29. Book your discounted tickets now and stay tuned to the Football New South Wales social pages for announcements around this year's guest speakers. It's time for our league's focus now, and we're going to look at Football New South Wales League One. We're at the end of a marathon season. It was Hills United that separated themselves to win both the championship and promotion for season 2024. And captain of that successful Hills United team is Glenn Kelshaw, and he joins us now. Glenn, congratulations and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and yeah, thanks for having me.
So at the end of a 30-week season, how's the body? Have you had enough left in the tank to celebrate the achievement?
Yes, we did have a little bit left in the tank to do that, fortunately. Yeah, it was really good. Really good past couple of days, being able to celebrate with everyone. But yeah, my body did take a toll throughout the season. It was long, so.
Yeah, well, 30 weeks, it is massive. Like, there's no denying that. But at the start of the season, did you ever envisage that, like, you'd be in this position, you know, absolutely smashing it with Hills United?
We definitely didn't. I was saying to a couple of boys towards the end of the season there, who would have thought after the end of last season that we had to finish this season where we were, it was pretty much a shock to everyone. But, yeah, it was an unreal feeling, so.
Do you remember a turning point then, or a moment where the title challenge and the promotion challenge actually became legitimate? Was it something that you can only find in hindsight, or was it something that you knew as it was happening, or hang on, lads, this is our year?
To be honest, we had a good meeting in pre-season with our leadership group and the coaches, and we were just talking about the group we had. And to be honest, one of the guys said, "This honestly, I've got a really good feeling about this year." And that was a moment that kind of hit me and was like, actually, when I look back on it, that was probably a turning point where I was like, man, we've got a good chance of having a crack here, and yeah, look where we are.
Tell us about some of the heroes and some of the players and people that made this happen on field and off. Like who when you write the story of this season in the club's history, gets remembered as the people that really helped make this success possible?
I'm going to say a massive part of success year this year was our president Tristan Rimmer. What he does for the club and how he portrays the club and runs the club is absolutely incredible. He's one of the most generous people I kind of know, and whenever we needed anything as a team, or he would make it happen straight away. And so I think, yeah, the culture from the club obviously comes from the top, and what we have done this year I reckon comes down to a big part of him. Obviously, yeah, us as players, we just go out and kick a ball, but the clubs don't run and everything doesn't happen without those guys. I'd say that.
Now, as captain of this team, you guided these boys to the top tier for the very first time in the club's history. So what a milestone, firstly. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
What do you believe, though, that your boys have over the other teams that gave you that competitive edge as such and, you know, put you into that top league?
Yeah, I'm gonna say our chemistry, obviously, on the field showed itself throughout the 30 games, but our friendship and camaraderie off the field, I think, is a massive part of our success this year. I sat down with Luke, our coach, early in the season, and one of his main objectives with our team was to do a couple of pub nights and do a couple of dinners together and really get that the friendship and camaraderie between everyone going really well. And I think, yeah, we constantly did that throughout the season, and I think that was a big part of it for us.
Now, you previously mentioned about, like, club culture and things like that, but you started off in the SAP program and have spent 10-plus seasons with Hills United. What was it that, you know, made you wanted to stay with them? Was it that culture? Was it the teammates, coaching staff? Can you talk us through that thought process for us?
I'm going to say just a club as a whole. I went there, I signed there when I was 16, and I'm now 28, so I've been there, 13 years, yeah. And, yeah, it's just the club itself, man. The people that run it and the people that volunteer their time are just incredible people. And, yeah, I've just enjoyed myself. It obviously helps that it's really close to home for me. But, yeah, it's just the people that are there make it feel really comfortable.
The division you were in obviously had a lot of quality. Inter Lions made it through to the national round of the Australia Cup but only ended up in sixth. And St George now have this promotion relegation playoff against Mount Druitt Town. I mean, based on your head-to-heads with St George, do you think they will be joining you in the top flight next season, or is that one a coin flip?
Yeah, I reckon it's a coin flip, but I don't know too much about Mount Druitt, about how Mount Druitt play. I've obviously seen some highlights here and there of them, but coming up against St George, yeah, they're a really quality team. They played some really good football. I think we beat them once and they beat us once, but yeah, I reckon they got a good chance of coming through and going up to NPL 1.
Well, the teams that went up to NPL 1, NWS Spirit finished 11th and were well clear of the scrap for relegation, and St George City took the division by storm, really. So when you assess in the off-season what your own team will need in order to come up and stay up, I mean, is the feeling that the core squad you've got is one that can immediately establish itself, or do you imagine it's actually going to be a pretty important off-season for Hills in order to make sure that the promotion isn't in vain and you don't come straight back down?
Yeah, I'm going to say definitely a combination of both. We've got a really good core and a lot of quality young guys at Hills. And I think combine that with a couple of signings here and there, I reckon we'll definitely be in for a good shout. There'll obviously be a lot of hard work in the off-season, and I'm sure the coaches and Trizzo and everything will be at the head forefront of that, making sure they sign the right people. But, yeah, few core players from this year combined with some signings, and I think we'll be in a good spot.
Now, Hills continues to kick goals, you know, with you guys hitting the top tier, but they've also formed a solid foundation with, you know, solid men's and women's League One teams, along with progressive youth setup. However, the part I want to highlight here is the power chair team. Now, there's only four teams in this comp. You're playing against Sydney FC, Wanderers, the Jets. What does it mean to be a part of a club that's so inclusive and it really does strive to allow people of all abilities to be part of the game?
Yeah, it's awesome. That's just another example of Trizzo and the club itself is that he wants to include all these people. And we get down there as often as we can. It's been happening for a couple of seasons now. And, man, it's just so encouraging going down and watching these guys play, and that just having for them to have a platform where they can obviously just enjoy a sport that they like doing, yeah, is awesome. I would always recommend if people had a spare Saturday throughout the day to jump down and see a power chair game, because what those guys do on the field is, yeah, it's honestly incredible.
Well, we've got the World Cup coming up for the power chair, so are you planning on getting down there?
Yeah, we'll get down there and watch a few games for sure.
One last one. What do you want Hills to be known for? I guess it's one thing to have the culture that you've spoken about and the on-field success, but now that you're going to be heading up into the top tier, a lot more attention, of course, with the games being streamed every week for your men's seniors and just that extra level of exposure and expectation, what is it that you want people to think of when they think of Hills United?
I guess a team that they're going to struggle to beat. Like, when they step on a field and verse us, it's not going to be an easy game. We'll fight for each other, we'll fight for the badge, and yeah, we'll leave everything out on the field. So definitely a team that they'll come up against, and it won't be an easy fight.
Well, enjoy the off-season, Glenn, and certainly I'm glad to hear that there have been some celebrations, and well-deserved, at the end of finishing top of Football New South Wales League One. So thanks for joining us on Kickoff, and we appreciate your insights into the club.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Day after day, Kappa rewrites the concept of sportswear. Kappa means teamwork, past, present, and future. Kappa never stops, because winning starts within. Two people, one brand. Kappa.
So, Henley, we had a lot of fun on this edition of Kickoff, didn't we? Some really good chats, and even though it's the off-season for a number of teams, it's exciting to know that we're going to continue having these conversations with clubs and getting to know the people behind the game going into the off-season.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see a few more of these key figures that, you know, aren't necessarily, like even we see with today with the ATEC, you know, his TD, it was nice to hear his side of the story and things like that, and I'm looking forward to exploring more of these stories further on in the next few episodes.
So on behalf of our guests and on behalf of my co-host Henley Warner, my name is Teo Pellizzeri. Thanks for joining us on Kickoff. We'll be back with another episode in a few weeks. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And what a goal it was! Stewart makes it 1-1.
And it is a gorgeous little chip. This could well be the moment. Yeah. It is the